Good afternoon. You're listening to Rave Length, being Wavelength from Wave and Woe, on Wesonance 104.4 FM. Today's guest is Bob Parks and his present band, The Wequiations. Take it away, Bob.
Album. Knock, knock, knock. Right. Don't go. Don't go. If I got on my knees and I pleaded with you not to go but to stay in my arms, would you walk out the door like you did before? This time be different, please stay. I call out your name like a prayer in the night. Would you leave me alone with my tears, knowing I love you so? Would you still turn and go? This time be different in some way. Don't go. Rest of the world, when you taught me to love you like this. Now I hang by a thread in the canyon of doom, but I still can't be saved by your kiss. If I got on my knees and I pleaded with you not to go, but to stay in my arms, walk out the door like you did before. This time be different, would you stay? Don't go,
please stay.
Don't go. Hi everybody in Radio Land, this is Parks and the Recreationals calling you from the great hereafter, and we're going to say hi. I've got one member of the Baby Boomers here, one of the original Generation X. We're going to do a song by Gene McDaniels, really undercredited performer. It's another Tear Falls. It wasn't a hit in England, but it's a beautiful song, man. Now and then I see you passing by, and for a while I don't begin to cry. But just when I think I'm all cried out, another tear falls. Another tear falls. I know you are still here in my heart. You are still here in my broken heart. Every time I go with someone new, it's not true, I don't have friends like that. I tell myself I've got over you. But just when I think I'm all cried out, another tear falls. Another tear falls. And then I know you are still here in my heart. You are Right, another really great oldie here. This is my favourite song of all time. There's two others. The second is Bless You, and the third is Joe Brown, Picture of You. But this is The Sea of Heartbreak by Don Gibson. Yeah, it's a lovely sunny day outside. We've got the doors open and people are looking in. So it's really exciting to be here. You ready? Everybody ready? Here we go. The lights in the harbour shine for me. Like a lost ship adrift on the sea. The sea of heartbreak, love's lost loneliness, memories of your caress, so divine, how I wish you were mine again, my dear. I'm on the sea of tears, a sea of heartbreak. Oh, how did I lose you? Did I fail? Why did you leave me? Always to stay. The sea of heartbreak, love, loneliness, memories of your caress, so divine, how I wish you were mine again, my dear. I'm on the sea of tears, a sea of heartbreak. What I'd give to sail back to shore, back to your arms once more. Come to the rescue. Take me and keep me away from the sea. The sea of heartbreak, lost loneliness, a memory of your caress, so divine, how I wish you were mine and my dear. I'm on the sea of tears, a sea of heartbreak, a sea of heartbreak. Moving right along, now another great, there's two really good instrumental groups, there's Duane Eddy, and there was Johnny and the Hurricanes back in the late 50s, early 60s, and I like all their tunes, but I picked one, Mr. Irving. I don't know, it's got a really nihilistic melody. It's breasted, disbelief can move mountains, and this has an orchestral backing on the album. We've got the brass section here, we're gonna go for it. Is everybody ready? One, two, three,
we'll be right back.
magic of your kisses. Holding you like this is ecstasy. I'm tired.
Ecstasy.
The love that you have given makes this life I'm living ecstasy.
Ecstasy.
Never let me go. Let your love light show. Come on and take me by the hand and lead me to the land of ecstasy.
Ecstasy.
The first time that I saw you, you showed me the door to ecstasy.
Ecstasy.
Now I just keep a praying that we'll always stay in ecstasy.
Ecstasy.
Oh, but don't you go away. Not until then. Come on. Travel up and down, and never have I found much ecstasy.
Ecstasy.
Now, dear, that I know you, everywhere I go through is ecstasy.
Ecstasy.
Well, kiss me, dear, and then kiss me once again. Come on, take me by the hand and lead me to the land of ecstasy.
Ecstasy.
Now we're coming right up to date. Now I suffer from anxiety and I have these very negative 25 hour things and I get very aggressive with them. And recently my mum, hello mum, how are you doing? I hope you got to hear
Mom.
Nikki and Tom in Australia. I don't know how you're going to feel about this, but it's the way I feel, you know it is. Anyhow, I can't remember what I was going to say now. Anyhow, I taught children with emotional illness. Let me hear it for Camilla Batman-Gurtage and the Kiss Company because they're doing such really beautiful work. At least I'm talking in the language now of the children, our children. Children who are at the bottom of the peak. Children who go through 50 million times worse experiences than this. But I'm going to tell you it raw, just like it happens to me. And here it comes now. Mum's giving up the will to live. You're going to die. Mum's giving up the will to live. You're gonna die. When the depression hits you, you don't even try. I looked you straight in the eye. I shouted, fucking bitch, I hate you. Then you started to cry. Mum's given up the will to live. You're gonna die. Mum's given up the will to live. You're gonna die. When the depression hits you, you don't even try. Dad raped you when you were on your change. Your cousin interfered with you when you were an innocent little girl. Tom's nervous breakdown was after the abortion I'd arranged. There's hardly been a day gone by when you haven't been betrayed. miss you when you're gone. You're gonna die when the good Lord finally takes you. Your soul snowdrops into the sky. I'll throw snowdrops in the sky. We'll snow snowdrops from the sky. He'll throw snowdrops from the sky. I don't know if I'm going to come out of it this time. I'll be stuck in psychosis. This is the worst you've ever been. This is what you tell me, Mum. Help! 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 I've got to tell you a bit of a story before we get on to our last tune. And this is one I wrote in the punk era in Los Angeles, 1976. But I'll do a little bit of talking. I really want to give a praise here to Camilla Batman Gertich one more time. And anyone at Parks Study Center who might be listening. Hi there, everyone. Anyhow, to research, I'm going to talk about it in the second half, to research a big crucifixion that I painted in encaustic. It's 30 foot by 7 foot 6. I went first to Port-au-Prince in Haiti. And then I went to Ouida, and I had a goat sacrifice as a part of a ceremony, and the power comes out of the goat, comes into me. It's one of the mores of rhythm and blues. Anyhow, Camilla was saying that our kids, that is bloodletting. It's like they'll smash their heads through a window pane, and letting the blood come out will be a release. Can you believe that? Well, society, much, much higher society than ours, more sophisticated in Africa, in Benin, already are there before, way before we are. So can we ready? Can we go for the tune now, guys? Is this brass? What I do it? Don't know. Sorry, hang on. I start this off. Hang on a minute. Preachy, eh? Another bit I want to say is I commissioned a composer, Ivan Moody, to write some music. The church thought the colours were too bright, my local church in Sway, so they wouldn't let me put it up there. So I commissioned some music, and I'm going to... Schnitka was one of Shostakovich's proteges, and he literally collaged a bit of Brahms or a bit of Mozart and put it per se in his musical compositions. And so I'm asking him to do this. He doesn't know, and I've asked him when he listens to it to hand his hold his hand over his ears. Forgive me if I play a few notes wrong, but it's like it's the riff that runs right through the early 60s. And then we're going to come into this the Big Nose song with brass accompaniment. So here we go.
Inside me, 'cause I'm human, is shared. Big Nose doesn't get on in life. Big Nose doesn't get rich. Big Nose keeps its identity. That's a dream it won't ditch. Big Nose tries to feel everything. Big Nose doesn't succeed. Everything isn't anything, as I'm only a weed. We are all poor and struggling. If we'd only be true, don't resist, don't be powerful. This concerns me and you. Gospel bit now. just as Big Nose had started. She was hearing her sights. She took up her guitar and completed the fight. The sax and the organ, the bass and the drums. Her sweet gospel story, she waits and it comes. Let me pray, let me pray. Let me pray, let me pray. Body is ready, clothes already that way. As her music develops, it is psychically steered. And true love is a message, not the hate that I feared. To hear with my senses, to hear with my soul, to hear what my beauty won't let me control. My poor little spirit, work worn and deceived, comforted by a woman, and the pain is relieved. It explodes as emotional as I dare let it be. It is not what I thought it was technologically. It is force in a woman's voice, in her playing sublime. This force in her planet, sorry, she is loving this time. It is force in a woman's voice, and it won't let me go. Force in a woman's voice, unexpected is. Acting, please turn me loose. Going out with this openness, I am taking a chance. Making noises to change the world, I will never advance. Unique in simplicity, confronted with truth, I personify chastity. All I get is abuse. What is shaping our senses? What is changing our pain? It's the force of society. That's the thing I can't name. Does it get up and threaten me? Does it open my eyes? Through the night, does it lessen me? Meeting daylight with lies. Is this force all consuming? Does it temper my love? All I know, it's a part of me. Here on earth, not above. It is my sensibility. It is my choice for change. Ending up as reality. I must now rearrange. think my thoughts, think my way of life, so they always receive what my prejudice says so loud, what I'll never achieve. Take for granted my weaknesses without question or guilt. Channel out of my innocence all the bad I have built. It is only by little things we can be what we are. It is only by suppleness we can ever get far. Wow! Wow!
Well, good afternoon. That was Bob Parks and the Recreations playing live.
Recreationals.
Playing live here at Raven Row. Raven Row Art Gallery near Spitalfields in London. Well, thank you very much, Bob. That was a spirited performance.
Thank you very much.
What about the Recreationals? Who are they?
We're all at the South Bank. Nick... Oh, I'm terrible on names.
Don't worry, you don't have to run through all
they're
the names.
We work at the South Bank, so we're all hosts.
Okay.
And we've done two Christmas parties. We bamboozled the stage, and we're hoping to do a full set next Christmas party, if anyone's listening from management.
And is it always six of them?
No, it's whoever
joins
in. There's a whole bunch of really good musicians,
because
they're all unemployed or trained. Yeah. We're going to try and get a really big thing together for next year.
Right. And that last number is something to do with Big Nose, isn't it?
Yeah, that was a group that I formed in 1975. I was living in Los Angeles for 10 years. I went out, Miriam was my ex-wife, she took off after a year and a half. I met her in Leicester College of Art, actually.
I was going to get round to Leicester.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to that and come back to that.
The
thing with her was that she took part in the first Lovin' in 1968, the Summer of Love in Griffith Park, because she said by the second night it was already contrived. Anyhow, her parents are Puerto Rican origin, and I like rhythm and blues. I went to Los Angeles to find out about rhythm and blues, and I've come to the conclusion it's English rock, Latin American music, and black gospel.
Yeah.
American music. You can bring those three together.
Right.
That's the R&B feeling as far as I'm concerned.
The sound of the brass is kind of New Orleans-ish, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a good gig coming up at the Barbican, actually. It's the Soul Rebels with Irma Thomas Saturday 24th. I've got my ticket for that. It's just going to be incredible. Yeah, but Johnny Otis, I met him. Miriam, I got contact with him, and finally I got to meet him. He's a good friend, but he's right out of it now, but I called his wife up. Anyhow, he claims to have coined the term rhythm and blues, and he said he played drums for Lester Young, and it came out, he had a club in Watts, and he came out of the old swing bands, the black swing bands, basically, whereas Jerry Wexler claims that New Orleans is... I think it's... the Mississippi blues went up to Chicago, the Florida blues went up to New York, and the Texas blues went out to Oakland,
right.
And I think that's R&B scene. It's like kind of slick, and New Orleans isn't slick enough. It's not as slick as LA.
Right. But you mentioned Leicester. In fact, you were at Leicester Art School, probably in the 60s?
1966 to 69.
Yes. Strangely enough, I was in Leicester at the same time, but we never crossed paths then, as far as I know.
I was carrying I took a non-punky sign and carried it on my head for 2 weeks, and I stuffed my clothes with paper and I wound metal around my body and played the flute with the other hand. Yeah. And somebody, the only person to even look at me was a vicar, and he said, is it something to do with the crucifixion?
Oh, yes.
And it hadn't occurred to me. They said, well,
right.
It could be. But apart from that, English people don't, at that time anyhow,
yes.
don't carry 15-foot-long poles on their head and walk around Leicester.
No.
But I thought you might have bumped into me. You didn't bump into
me. I would have known you, wouldn't I?
Perhaps you would. Okay.
But you were studying art at the time.
Yeah. I went to Chelsea School of Art. I did pre-dip there for a uh-huh. year. And I had a... George Fuller, I wanted to do sculpture. It was only eight people. And I fell in love with the Jewish... Lizzie Merrington, or Lizzie Danziger. If you're out there, please contact me. Anyhow, I fell in love with her. And I went to her wedding. But I didn't get into sculpture.
Uh-huh.
And I was crushed. And I cried uh-huh. for 8 hours. And I never cried since then. And my second choice was Leicester. And Lizzie's second choice was Chelsea. She got in there. And I got in. And Stephen Cohen was the guy that she was in touch with there. Anyhow, I went there. And I made the weakest decision of my life, which was to accept the art school system. Uh-huh. Before that, I'd met Agnes Ehrensvig, Wishaikian in Europe, and his son. I went to see him before I started at Chelsea, and he said, do something outrageous at the ICA and get a name for yourself and treat it like a base, which I had used it.
Yeah.
But I used to, like, study. I used to, like, grit my teeth and stare, not close my eyes, for 6 hours, staring at the life model. And I'd get in there at 7 in the morning and just solid.
Yeah.
And they all thought I was on drugs or something like that, but I just loved art.
Yeah. Yeah.
And anyhow, then I went to Leicester and I got all avant-garde.
Right.
And
So that was sort of, you got interested in performance art? Or
yeah, I was one of the first people in England to do performance art. I was digging holes in about 1966 all around the art college grounds.
And yeah.
Robin Klasnick was in the year above me.
I was going to say, that's Robin Klasnick who's been running Matt's Gallery.
Hello, Robin, you're supposed to be listening, so hi there too.
So that's Matt's Gallery,
yeah.
which has been going for about, 30 years in the east of London.
That's
it?
Right,
yes.
the installation. Well, the first installation artist was Robert Irwin, who they ought to put on at the Turbine Hall. And there's a biography of it's seeing something, it's forgetting the name of the thing you see. By, anyhow, he... Really freaky, anyhow. He's a West Coast artist. And
yeah.
James Turnbull and the Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena were working together, and they all freaked out at his ideas. But he's the one. He's the
so
main.
Who do you think influenced you at that time to get into performance art?
Yeah, there's one person who is the god. It's Kazimir Malevich, or how do you pronounce his name?
Malevich.
I don't know how you pronounce it. But I saw a little one of his drawings in the Peggy Guggenheim collection in 65 or 64, I think it was. It was just a little pencil drawing,
yeah.
and it has such power. And it was even better than the Kandinsky's. And I thought, like, this is it. This is as good as art. And then later I heard he'd sequestered the whole Russian Orthodox tradition and put it within his work. Now, if he were alive today, well, he'd be way ahead of the boat, because socialist realism, it was his invention.
Right.
It came from... Anyhow, it's a long
But that's
story.
Not performance art, is it?
It is, because what he did was... It was Kandinsky at the time wrote concerning the spiritual in art, and he said, I have a feeling inside me, I put it on a canvas, someone sees the canvas, they get a feeling inside them.
Yeah.
And it's the two feelings that it's about. So performance art is just substituting consciousness for the picture plane. So really, it's really close to movies. It's John Cage. I mean, he's the main man, and syncretism. They recently did a thing at his Indeterminacy album. They got it wrong. They got it wrong, and he didn't bring in synchronicity. He talked emotively,
right.
and you should do it deadpan,
yeah,
at different speeds,
yeah.
and the syncretic moment. And then after that, Pollock, of course,
mm-hmm.
but he was an idiot because he had, you know, the surrealists developed automatism, and they were all communists, and they did it to liberate mankind. Well, being an American, he took it on an ego trip, and he had to commit suicide as a consequence. That was the only. I mean, it's great what he did, and he coined the term literalism, which is literally everything in art. And so he single-handedly engineered that. Him, Salvador Dali, and Yoko Ono, I'd say, are the three main people in that area.
Right. Okay. So after leaving Leicester, your career sort of went into a kind of random selection mode, didn't it?
Leicester, yeah. I got a job at the... I worked in the canteen, clearing away the...
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they were the most real people, the people who were working in the kitchen in the south.
Yes.
So I really liked that. And then various... And I got a job at an MA course. G.S. Fraser invited me to do an MA in Modern English and American Literature. And I don't know, I got books and I was tearing... They were my own books, but I was tearing the pages out in the library so I could see all the pages at the same time, which scandalised the scene there. So, I don't know. And I rewrote the whole works of Wallace Stevens, 800-something pages, one Christmas, in nonsense verse. And I took one in 25 pages and submitted it as my paper. And I sort of... They didn't... accept my papers.
This was at the end of your course in Leicester?
The MA course, so I didn't complete that. Then I stayed on for a bit, then I met Miriam, and then we hung around Leicester for a year or two, and then my mum and dad moved down to the New Forest, and so we came down to the New Forest, and then we were going to do a world trip, and Miriam was going back to Los Angeles, and there's all a lot of things about abortion and that. Miriam had two abortions, and that was inspirational. She got pregnant, and mum doesn't agree with it, and she's right to not agree, so she'll find this a bit upsetting. But she was bleeding to death, actually, on Christmas, and the police, the ambulance came, and I was singing nursery rhymes. That was Colin Jones, actually, libelous, got the thing mixed up at the time. And a lot of the abortions. Then she miscarried from the abortion. They had to have another operation. Then she got pregnant again and had another miscarriage. But we thought that we thought because we were baby boomers, and we thought because we were spoilt children, we'd make really bad parents, and there are too many children in the world. So we took the abortion route.
Yes.
And then I went out to America, and I've always wanted to live in Cambodia, Angkor Wat. That's my two spiritual centres. It's a long story. Should I go into very briefly? Very briefly. At Musée Guimet, I was drawing a little stylized Buddhist hairstyle on the Khmer sculpture, and the thing started coming out in three dimensions. And Michelangelo, Rodin, it was a feeling, but I realised there was a conscious relation between two and three dimensions. When I was doing the course at Leicester University, he put me to study syllogistic logic, and I got the word wrong, and I studied symbolic logic instead. But the guy in the logic department, on time, which I was interested in, put me in touch with St. Augustine, who defined the past as memory, the present is what you see, and the future is what you feel. So, writing, painting, sculpture. And then I went back to see the bas-reliefs in Bantry Sri in North Cambodia. And I started hearing, well, I don't know, the Indians, because I was born in Southall, the Vedic scriptures teach that the sound atoms comprise form at an electron level. And so I think 68 with Ken, we were discovering that sound was the most basic thing. So I've practiced all my life a synesthesia, hearing what I smell, hearing what I see, hearing what I see. And I started hearing the sculpture rather than seeing. It started to move between dimensions. Right. Then a long story later, at the Winchester Mystery House in San Jose, California, I discovered that in the psychic bookshop, that the Khmers in the 12th century was attributed to the time of Asia, but actually they disappeared onto another plane of existence. I've been to so many world conferences on this, so that's one of the influences, the Khmers and the time element and their spatial understanding. It's been one of my life studies.
Right. So you found yourself in America.
Yeah.
And you were searching for the source of R&B or something?
Yeah. I went to Street Corners in Watts, and a guy there who was selling hats said, yeah, my brother's sister-in-law sings, her boyfriend plays at this jubilistic church in South Central. So I went there, and I'd never stopped going for 7 years. So it was Brother Bob. Now, you be bold now, Brother Bob. You stay sweet now, honey. How's it going, man? How's it going? And I went back just a few years ago, and there was Minister Rivers. He said, Brother Bob, you old. And I said, Brother Rivers, you fat. So it was really funny exchange. And that's my home from home in America, Starlight Church of God in Christ. Church of God in Christ was the original Holy Roller Church, 1895, out of Memphis. And someone else explained how blues and jazz are different soul beats of gospel music. So this is the roots. And then I had a friend who was a comparative mythologist who put me in touch. I'm a Stalin. Well, G.S. Fraser described me as one of the few remaining romantic Stalinists, and I've always kept that.
Romantic what?
Stalinists.
Oh.
And,
did he write The Golden Bough?
No. He was a contemporary of Lawrence Durrell. He did all the poetry programs on the radio, on the third program in the 50s.
All right.
He's eminent Mandarin, but he never made it quite as...
All right.
But he's a real high flyer. So he was a drunk alcoholic... a sweet guy. And, so, sorry, I've forgotten what I'm talking about.
Romantic Stalinist.
Right, sorry. And then...
That's all right.
So, G.S. Fraser described me as that. Romantic Stalinist. Oh, yeah, and then there's a sociology lecturer at the art school, and she said, if you're going to have a revolution, start with yourself. So I've had this Stalinist regime inside me. I wouldn't dream of imposing that on anyone else, but it's just
but
pure
thinking. You got involved in this sort of... It sounds like you got involved in this religious gospel choir.
No, spiritual. Everything about my art is spiritual. I'm not at all religious. But
what's the difference?
Well, one's organised religion and the other's coming from...
But you're part of a church?
Well, because they're black You know, I when I was in America, I found I could... I didn't trust white people. I came back from America, and I used to sort of go into the corner in groups of white people. I don't trust them. I really didn't. It took a lot of time to... My friends in America were black, you know, that was my hope. Because they gave me love. They put their breath... They welcomed me. I was going through a divorce. I had nothing... Except for that, I had a friend who was a homosexual, who died of AIDS, actually. And I went back to L.A., I don't know, a year after I'd come back to England, I had a show in Australia, a photorealist show of everyone's portraits, which I put on in Brisbane. Mm-hmm. This is 1982, so before anything. So I made a contact with the Aboriginal community there, and I was playing my electrified fife on these soap boxes in this fruit barn with all the Aboriginals. We had a great time there. But then when I came back to England... Sorry, I've forgotten what I'm talking about again.
You were... I mean, your CV seems to include sort of references to films. You were an extra
New York. That's the thing. I studied with Lee Strasberg in Hollywood. I studied method acting. So I applied Stanislavski's sensory work along with Pollock's literalism, and I sort of combined the two into each other. Before that, I took a year out and did performance art. There were choices in the late 60s, two areas. It's self-mutilation or sex were basically the choices for performance artists. And let me tell you, everyone who's a performance art is absolute bullshit. It is, Kandinsky said, I'll do a bit of typewriter or I'll do a bit of drawing. It's another discipline. It is not a subject in its own right any more than now art is a subject. It's a holistic team effort with everyone in humanity working shoulder to shoulder. So it's nothing special about it, but it's a useful discipline. Mm. But then it was a subversive activity, and that was to try to reconceptualize. I've forgotten again what I'm talking about.
That's all right. It's all right. We're talking about movies. You kind of... Oh, yeah. Lee Strasberg,
so that was using the method. So... to let out literalism, when I couldn't... Excuse me, Mum, for using swear words, but I couldn't fuck Miriam. But so I said, well, I'll fuck society. So I walked around Los Angeles in a jockstrap for a year and lived out the hypocrisy in Renaissance time, these clothed men painting these naked women behind closed doors. So I thought, well, I'll take it out. And I got thrown out of the Institute of Modern Art in Los Angeles. I got screamed at in McDonald's. I got... but I carried on, and I did the self-portrait. I did it... I mixed hand soap in with some cheap oil paint on a bit of plasterboard, and I used the first laser gun to focus my attention on it. Yeah. And I did self-portrait. We spent a year doing it, and... But Ramona, who is a half-sister of Carmen, who is my ex-mother-in-law, she married an eminent Chicago psychiatrist, and she said, don't mess around society, it'll kill you. So at that point, I didn't proceed anymore. Right. But, as it says on my album, I was a friend with John Duncan, and he invited me... This is the other radio programme that I've done, and it was Close Radio. And at that time, 1976-77, Genesis P. Orridge and those people had come out to L.A. It was the time of the show at the ICA that was so scandalised the news of the world.
Very timely. Very timely.
And or the Daily Mail. And he'd done all these things like swallowing this spike and spewing up his guts, and Cosi Fan Tutti was sewing up wounds and all of that. And that was the time, John told me this, that he, Chris Burden, backed away from Scary Work. It scared him. And then that was also the time that John Duncan...
Well, Chris Burden was the guy that had himself shot in the arm.
And crucified to the Volkswagen and all that. He was all part of the circle. And
he backed away from this, you say?
At that time, he was scared off by Genesis P. Orridge.
Right.
This is from the horse's mouth. I'll tell you something else from the horse's mouth. Is I know Bunce Blackwell, who was Little Richard's manager, so this is really good. Little Richard, Lou Rawls and James Brown started out as a gospel trio in Macon, Georgia, and they weren't good enough. So that's when they went secular. But it's really... You know, it's great. So, real gospel music. Old women throw their wigs in the air, and that's just starters. Just solid screaming. I mean, when you were feeling suicidal in the 50s or 60s, you'd go along to church. Now it's all pleasant, sweet, you know, happy soul music. But it's really aggressive, violent, disruptive. That's what it is. That's its place.
Yeah.
It represents a release. Right. Well, you can imagine black energies as they get pushed down. Sorry.
And you staged something at the Barbican, didn't you, with Fontella Bass?
Yeah.
Is that right?
David Jones. Thank you, David, if you're listening. Because I had a job as a steward, and I wanted to put a gospel choir on. David Jones invited me to do our choir, the Calvary Church of God in Christ, because the African Caribbean community in Windrush in the early 50s brought Kojic over to England.
And Kojic being?
Church of God in Christ.
Okay.
Out of Mace.
Yep.
Actually. And the gospel, Church of God in Christ is the original. You got all these other groups, like you see them on Top of the Pops. They're all offshoots of Kojic, and they're all watered down.
Right.
But the real stuff is the Kojic, and they're all over England, actually. But I got the workshop choir with Carol and Daryl. And there's Errol and Nikki, and we backed Fontella Bass. Well, when she came on the Friday night for rehearsal, I was the only person there, and all the others were in this coach going around the North Circular Road.
Yeah.
And there weren't any black people in sight, so it was a real
problem.
I was going
to say, were you the only white person in the choir? Or?
Yeah, and I was the only white person in America, and no one has ever come.
So no, but I mean, with this backing of Fontella Bass, you must have been the only white person.
Because
I actually went to that concert. I remember that concert at the Barbican.
Really?
Yes. And there was a point at which she tried to get audience participation.
Yeah.
She was trying to get people on the stage.
Yeah. But she wanted us to do Rescue Me. But, oh, no, ma'am. We don't do that.
We don't do that anymore.
No, we don't do that, no.
Okay.
So she accepted it. David Peaston was there as well.
Yes. Yes, I remember
her brother.
Yeah,
she's got a great voice.
Yes, absolutely. Fantastic. But so are you still involved with this choir in?
I'm not, because.
But you go to Canvey Island, don't you?
Yeah, Dr. Feelgood, and it was Canvey. What's this music?
What's this music?
Yeah, is it?
What's going on?
Is it a divine intervention?
Some sort of background music?
It's rather good. Okay, we carry on. Can we sing with it?
We've got some strange.
It's Philip Glass. Oh, I see. It's a guy in the. They're rehearsing in the. Hello out there.
Oh, yes, it's somebody.
Oh, they can hear us too. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Canvey Island, to me, when I was a little boy, my grandmother had a place before the floods on Canvey.
Yeah.
And as kids, we used to go there two or three times a year sometimes. Mm. Me, Mum, particularly us, loved it.
Mm.
And I was about 7 or 8 or 9.
Yeah.
And I think it was in a barbershop or something like that. They had a jukebox. And there was a Brenda Lee record and King Curtis blaring the sax out. I thought, this is it. This is the feeling to which I devote my whole life.
Yeah.
And then later, at Leicester, John Thompson, who later came down and spawned the whole Brat Pack at Goldsmiths, he headed the thing. He was at Leicester with Harry Subron at that time. This was how it was good for me to do that. In the Life Room, he brought Shirley and Lee's Let the Good Times Roll from the Sue Story Part 1 and 2, played it while the Life models were moving around, and I thought, this is it, you know, I've arrived. All my colour is going on about the rhythm and blues feeling. And in the room below, a year later, the guy, the Blood of Jesus, you know, the guy who did the Blood of Jesus, he's a famous classical composer.
Richard's going to help us out.
Here come Richard.
Gavin Bryars
was teaching at Leicester, and an old tramp had come into the room beneath ours.
Yes.
And this is where he taped that tape. So that was actually beneath the floor about a year or two later.
Right.
Yeah.
And then...
all right. Okay, go on.
Go on.
I can't remember.
All right, fair enough.
At art school in the 60s, the whole thing was about not working to have not have preconceived ideas.
Right.
And that becomes decidedly problematic. When you're in LA, you try not to have preconceived ideas, but they are themselves preconceived ideas, and so it gets difficult.
Well, I first came across you, actually, at the Nathaniel Mellors exhibition.
I had a show at Arts Way. This is Linda Frederick. She had a nervous breakdown. Oh, it's over the National. Woohoo! Linda. And she met my brother at Isleworth Hospital, had a nervous breakdown. And she reappeared. I was a postman in Sway when my parents, when I came back from America, and I recognised her. And she was at New Milton School, Armwood, and I did a bit of work for her as artist in residence.
Mm.
And anyhow, she retired and raised £500,000 from the National Lottery and opened Arts Way. And then for 2 or 3 years she was pushing. They didn't really want me to, but I got a show there.
Yeah.
And 2 or 3 years later, Nathaniel had a show there through Robbie and Pasek. And I invited him around to my house.
Uh-huh.
And he looked at myself and he gave me his gallerist. And I got a show in Amsterdam and they...
Is that the Zinger Gallery?
The Zinger Presents.
Right, yeah.
Stephen Van Grimsen. And then... they sponsored this album that I've done, A Gatefold.
Is that the R&B feeling?
Yeah, the R&B. And it was on at the ICA. This is where you saw it at that.
Yes.
I had done a picture of my mum.
And that's issued by Junior Aspirin Records.
That's right.
We might as well
get the website on that.
Yeah.
And you just look it up and it's still available.
Yeah.
I don't know how much. And anyhow, this is what I've recently completed is this crucifixion. Uh-huh. A 20-year plan in it. 13 foot by 7 foot 6. And I've commissioned, I think I read that thing out in the thing, I've commissioned this composer, Ivan Moody, to compose some music. So I basically came back and I identified six kinds of space. There was a Xenarchist conference, and I was talking to a sound engineer from Berlin and a music theorist from Thessalonica University, and he was interested in this. So I was getting this team of a multidisciplinary team together to investigate sort of architectural space, Le Corbusier with Xenarchist movement. There was sound space, obviously, visual space, sacred space for believing, political space for belonging, and social space for thinking. And then I realised that all of these were already there in Benin. This is why I say it's so sophisticated, the society. So then I read a book, a philosophical book, about the relationship between place and space. And so where you grow up actually frames the way you perceive everything. Yeah. So I'm trying to set like a trans-global multidisciplinary team in a European space, which is really is to create a new spiritual reality. We were the baby boomers, and we had the sexual revolution and the spiritual revolution, which is coming. I believe that the big theme of the from now on, from our generation, will be death. And we're going to sort of push and demystify death, and that's going to be our big topic. And that's why I did the song about mum's death.
Right.
Yeah.
Tell me again what Big Nose is. Is this a character
Big Nose,
you've created?
No, no. I had a little pig nose amp. The Latin American guys in L.A. over at Griffith Park used to play the bongos. Yeah. I had a little fly that my brother sent out from Australia. I had a little Barker's Berry pickup foot on it.
Right.
So it would be louder than this. And they pushed me away because I was too loud with a little... It was the first one of those battery-powered amps. So you could take So I just changed the P to a B. I was on the Gong Show... And,
you changed the P to a B, so it should have been pig nose.
Yeah, to big nose, and I got a big nose. So that was I was using my, and that's how it became my stage name, Big Nose.
Okay.
And I then Big Nose won. I had an out of work actress. I had a small part in New York, Robert De Niro. I met someone on the set, and she, and then little boy next door, Punky, and his brother was a cholo, and his mother was an alcoholic.
Right.
She's a sort of paedophilia here coming in, so I've got to leave it.
Let's move on.
I better move on. But it's not really. But anyhow, that was Big Nose 1.
Yes.
Then Big Nose 2 was Chair, and Punky was still in it. And we went on for the Gong Show. I did a thing at the Mask. I had a car, and drove, and it ran out of petrol. I had these great big... they had like doweling, inch doweling, painted red, like dynamite I was walking on. And I had this jock strap, and the car broke down 2 miles from the Mass Club, so we walked that whole time, and then when we got there it had all stopped. And anyhow, we did
where
our
does, where does the dynamite fit into this? I don't
they're not real dynamite, but they look like dynamite, you know, platform shoes. And that was what, you know, they were just the fashion at that time, you know.
Yes.
That was punk stilts and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So that was what we were, and then we came to the club, and the Punky was throwing popcorn, and I know Chia was doing. She had a great soul voice, actually, and that was on that Close Radio. She was on that one. Anyhow, I did my epileptic fit, because I developed what was an epileptic fit. I made as much noise, it ripped right through my voice till no sound would come out, move my body as violently as it would. It started off at art school, trying to walk with my legs at different speeds, and just questioning everything. Like rolling down a hill when you're a little kid, that sort of self-abandonment. Actually, in Port-au-Prince... The voodoo chief there, say, who's a biochemist, said that actually it's wrong to say it's self-abandonment, because you're not abandoning yourself. So he could pick me up on that one. That was like fine-tuning on words in that kind of area. Sorry, I've forgotten what I'm talking about again.
The Gong Show.
The Gong Show, yeah. So then Barris wanted me, but apparently my testicles were hanging out of the Gong, so I had to put these tights on.
On the Gong Show?
Yeah.
Right.
So I had to put these tights on, which I did, and they didn't want Punky and Chair in it. And I wrote a song, Chair, which appears on the album, actually.
Okay.
And I did it. So I got residual from Brazil and the various places being on the Gong Show. Jamie, what's his name, was on it, because he had a big nose too, and they gonged me after 45 minutes. Yeah. And then I did the Big Nose song twice, actually.
Right.
And I had it scored for the NBC Orchestra, but I didn't have enough scores for the whole orchestra, so I had to just play myself. But that would have been a great achievement.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Bob. That's Bob Parks, live on Rave Length. And do you want to sing it? You could sing us out if you want, Bob.
All right. This is a guy. This is like, I was walking in Watts, and this is in Bobby's Shine Parlour, and he did the lead in Get a Job. And Junior, who'd just come out of prison, put his hand on my shoulder and walked down the street there. And the next night, there was a murder on that little bit of street that we were walking down, and he went, do-do-dum, dum, 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 do-do-dum, dum. When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light I see, do-do-dum, dum, no, I won't be afraid, no, I won't shed a tear, just as long as you stand. And Jesus, you come in here too. We want the whole wide world to join in with this. Stand by me. And darling, 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 won't you stand by me? Oh, now, now, stand by me. Screaming Jay Hawkins does a great version. Solomon Burke does. And Finest Tadsby did one of the... We got up on stage with Finest Tadsby and joined in with it.
Is it Benny King?
Benny King did it, and John Lennon did it as well. But yeah. Benny King... It was actually originally a gospel song, Lord, Stand By Me.
Right. Thank you very much, Bob.
Okay.